right, door is closed, so I guess we'll get started. Hello, everyone. So my name is Laurent Bugnon. I'm coming from Switzerland, like we were just chatting, and I'm here to talk to you about Windows 10 Universal, obviously, but more specifically about what you should do and take care of if you want to run on multiple devices. So we just saw before in Mike's presentation, you can run your projects, you know, on phones, on tablets, on small Dell Venue Pro like this one. You can run it on Surface like I have here. You can run on Raspberry Pi, and even on those big screens, right? The 84-inch screen, the Surface Hub that Mike was talking about, is absolutely amazing. It's actually bigger than the screen you have here, so I don't know if you can imagine. And this is a fully multi-touch, so you can draw on it with a pen. You can use it with your fingers if you want. And that is basically stuff that you can target nowadays. And the price is coming down. I mean, I had the small 55-inch in front of me, not in my living room, unfortunately. And apparently the price is around $7,000, which is expensive. But I mean, for a firm and considering what it can bring to your meeting rooms, right, it's starting to be affordable, I would say. So a couple of words about me first. I live in Switzerland. I'm the senior director for Identity Mine. We are a firm based in Seattle, Washington. I am one of three people in Europe, so we have a small crew here. And I'm also the Microsoft Regional Director for Switzerland. For those of you who don't know the Regional Director program, it's a smaller program than the MVP program. We are 130 worldwide. We are not paid by Microsoft in any way. We are basically employees without salary slip at the end of the month, pretty much. We do that pretty much on our free time as well. And it's just a nice way to get in touch with some, you know, strategical people at Microsoft, talk to them. And so I definitely encourage you to find your regional directors in UK. There are a few of them, like I think two or three, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, talk to them and use them in case the local Microsoft people, you know, might be just busy or not here right now. So we are basically doing that. I'm also a Microsoft MVP. I do a lot of Xamarin work. And for those of you who use it whenever, I'm the author of the MVVM Lite Toolkit, which is a small toolkit that is quite popular nowadays to build XAML, especially applications, but also running on Xamarin. And about my firm, we do a lot of client application development on all kinds of platforms. XAML is our first love, and we still remain very faithful to XAML. But sometimes we have an affair with Xamarin, you know. And we do also, of course, other things, HTML, because sometimes you have to, and stuff like that. But really, we work a lot with designers, and we have been concerned by the problem of running applications on multiple devices for many years. Now, everybody is concerned with that because you have one project and you can deploy so easily, right? So that's exactly the topic of the talk. So when we talk about design, I like to remind people about the principles, right? When people come with a design language, like back then, I was in a session last week with Albert Schum. He's the head of Windows 10 design, and he used the word Metro. So I'm going to use the word Metro. This is the name of the design language, and you know, the German people can sue me if they are not happy, right? Basically, this design language, I think now it's called Windows Universal Design Language or something like that, or Microsoft Design Language, whatever. Initially, they had like six big principles. Now they kind of came down to four, and they are still very important to keep in mind. The first thing is keep it simple. So when you do an application, don't try to solve all problems at once in your application. It's much better to have multiple apps which do smaller things and which collaborate. And in Windows 10, you have really amazing collaboration tools. You can call a method on a different application, get the result back. You can easily start an application and make sure that this is actually the application that you want which starts, which before was not always the case, right? Before you were starting a mapping application, but you were not totally sure, is it really mine? Now you can do that. So a lot of collaboration systems, which allow you to build some good experiences, you know, across multiple apps. Try to make it personal. It's very important. And one thing you can use for that is, for example, just roam the settings. Very easy in Windows 10. just save the setting to a roaming folder that's going to roam automatically. And then after that, you'll have the same settings on all of your devices, including phones, for example. So that's pretty cool because let's say you change the background color on your app on the PC, and then you start the same application on the phone and you have the same background color. These kind of things, right? Try to sync universal. Now we are really truly on a universal platform, and we need to think from the start, already in the design process, about all the devices that it's going to run on. Okay? And so the recommendation is to design at least for a tablet, for a phone, and maybe if you go on a big screen, Surface Hub or Xbox, this kind of thing, for a TV experience, I would say. And that takes in account a few things, right? First of all, the screen is smaller. Maybe it's vertical instead of horizontal, these kind of things. Maybe the viewing distance is not the same. So you need to keep that in mind when you do your design. And then after that, when you integrate, we have a lot of tools to make it easier. And finally, create delight. I mean, it was really a turning point in the software industry when we started noticing that people in the office work better when they have fun, right? I'm not saying fun in the sense, let's have fun, right? I'm saying enjoy your application. The application should help the user to perform the tasks. And, you know, sometimes we take a line of business application, classic UI, a little bit battleship gray like we did back then in the days. Then we turn it into something more enjoyable. And then we get some feedback from people who say, well, we just saved like 2 hours per day just because the UI is thought, you know, thoroughly, and some designers actually spend time on the whole experience. Obviously, it's not just, you know, changing colors and all that, but this is important. So those four principles, keep them in mind, quite important. And now let's talk about a universal app and what it really is. So in the past, we had already the keyword universal on Windows Phone 8 applications. It was not really truly universal because you still had what we call, we call that a head, right? It's basically what you deploy to the application, the main project, if you want. So we still had two heads. And more importantly, I mean, you still had shared files, but more importantly, you had two executables in the end, and then you had two stores. And I think the two store thing is really where you notice that it's not really universal, right? Now we have really one store. We deploy one executable, one Apex. It's a package. It's actually a zip file with everything you need inside that. We deploy that to one store, and then the user can say, I want to load that application on my phone or on my laptop or on my Xbox, etc. Okay? Now, in iOS, for those who do a little bit of iOS or Xamarin or anything, you might have seen they also have a universal there. And so here, the idea is I'm running on iPhone or iPad. So it's not really universal in the sense of that Windows is universal with all those devices, but it's already, you know, two devices handled by one app. And if we move to Windows 10, that's what you get. So you'll get one head, okay? Like I said, one package, one head, one binary at the end. You can have, of course, multiple pages, and we support all those platforms with that project, okay? One thing you can do, and we'll talk more about that in a second, you can have multiple families. We call them device families. And for example, here I have two pages. I have one page which is the fallback, like, you know, for PC and all that. Nothing special here. But I also have a special page for the mobile family. Okay, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. And with that one head, we support all those classes of family. Okay. And we are not kidding about the HoloLens. Your applications, if it's a universal application, can actually run into the HoloLens. You have a start menu and everything, and then you can actually run your apps, okay? Now, if you run a Windows 8 application on Windows 10, that's what's going to happen. Remember on Windows 8, you had some UI which was a little bit hidden, right? You had to swipe from the side to show the settings or the charms. You had to swipe from the bottom to show the command bar. And now what's going to happen is that you're going to have this small menu in the top left. And if you tap on app command, that's going to show the bar. But basically, the main difference with Windows 8 is that now your applications are windowed. Instead of running full screen, they run in Windows. That was probably one of the main requests of the users who were using Windows 8 after Windows 7. They said, well, no, we want to run on Windows. We want to have multiple applications on top of each other. So of course, you need to think about it when you design, right? Your users can actually resize the application. And so this responsive design that we are going to talk about in a moment is important not just because of the screen size, but even if you have a big PC with a big screen, you can actually, you know, resize your app and have all kinds of sizes. So responsive design, super important. So here you're going to have this bar coming up at the bottom of the window, possibly the settings on the side. The experience is okay, but I would say maybe it's time to think, if you have a Windows 8 application, to slowly, you know, transfer it to Windows 10. It's not that hard, just needs a little bit redesign, maybe use the new principles, well, the evolution of the principles, really. And like this, you'll have a great experience. That is a pretty much iconic slide. I'm sure if you have followed the space for a while, you have seen it already. The design language is inspired from the transportation signage. Okay, it is easy to read. It is clear. It uses a simple icon language. That is still true. The icon language is evolving, but it is still very pregnant. And a few principles are very strongly still there. Like, for example, if you take the photo application, the content is king, okay? You see all the pictures here in the middle. Now, what changed a little bit towards before is that now we have actually UI on the screen. Before, the recommendation was kind of to hide the UI. Well, we tried it, people didn't really like it so much, okay? So now we come back to a UI which is actually on the screen, but still, you know, not in the middle and center. The content is really what you want to show to your users. So here we have the photo application, a few interesting things. We have some navigation here. I'll show you in a moment. It's using a control called split view to do that. And then you have navigation. It's a kind of tab navigation, if you want. It's like an evolution of that. And here it is on the left. And at the bottom here, we have a few controls. It's a little bit small, but the bottom one is the settings. So we don't put settings out of the screen anymore and we swipe. Instead, it's really on the screen and you're free to put it wherever you want, okay? Again, all the design things that I show you here, those are just recommendations, as usual. If you want to do something else, no problem at all. Your application is never going to be rejected because of design, okay? But a good idea is probably to put it, you know, in the split view, down to the left. It's kind of what the pre-installed applications are doing nowadays. And then here on top, we have something very important, the command bar. So why do I stress the command bar so much? It's because we talk a lot about the hamburger menu and, like, you know, some people like it, some people don't like it. The hamburger menu is this menu, which is this button, which is on the top left. And then you, when you click it, it kind of opens a menu. On the phone, it's not great because you have to reach quite far with your thumb. And nowadays, the phones are so big, right? It's really hard. Hamburger menu is really just for commands which are not super critical to your application, like navigation, things like that. It's not really super something that you use all the time. On the other hand, the command bar is where you want to put your primary commands, okay? And the command bar is a great control because it's going to adapt itself automatically, like pretty much all the controls of Windows 10, to the device on which it runs. Like here we have the command bar top right, easy to reach with the mouse, no problem. If you go on a phone, this is the same app. And by the way, all those primary apps are using the Universal Application Framework to be developed. So Microsoft is really eating their own dog food. And here we have a good example. For example, here we have the navigation. So on the PC, it was on the left and then vertical. Here, it's actually a pivot. So the well-known experience, you use your thumb to swipe left and right. Very convenient. And the control is actually adapting itself to the platform on which it runs. And here, down to the left, easy to reach with the thumb, the command bar, where you put your most important command. So again, this is adapting the UI to the usage, okay? So we do have one design language for all those platforms. And the Windows team is helping you by giving you one design language, one control set. Those controls are going to be adaptive automatically. For example, if you have a tab control on the PC, it's going to translate to a pivot on the phone, okay? Something really cool, those calendar controls, for example, they are very evolved. We'll see an example in a moment. If you use it on a PC, it's going to look like that, but if you go on the phone, it's going to adapt itself to be a little bit smaller, a little bit less intrusive and taking a lot of space. Also, some controls are going to adapt themselves to some scenarios. Like, for example, if you use a flyout, like here, a menu flyout, if you use a mouse you'll see more things on the screen. The menus are going to be smaller. And basically, with a mouse, it's pretty easy to reach and to click on them. But if you use touch, they are going to take a little bit more space. And that's done automatically by the menu flyout. Okay? Now, not all the flyouts are doing that automatically. Later, I'll just show you a quick demo how you can do that in your own application using a so-called adaptive trigger. A custom trigger. Very nice technology here. So that's very convenient. When you run on a tablet, anything with touch, you know, you have something which is easier to target. So let's see a quick demo where I'm going to show you some of the experience here. When I go down, there is an echo, right? So, okay. So first thing I want to show you, I told you about this thing, this flyout, which is adapting itself. You actually have that in Office as well. If you go here to the paste menu, you see the button is quite small, and then here I could have like four or five choices. But if I use my finger on the same button, you see, it's a different experience, right? You barely notice it because it's really well done, but actually it's really helping you, you know, when you use things like that. Now, the other thing I wanted to show you, remember the calendar control that I showed you, and then I told you it's pretty cool, it's going to adapt itself. Well, look at that. I'm going here. This is Windows, right? Ha! And it's not showing up. That's great. Well, basically, if it was showing up, sometimes my Surface Pro 3 does that. I don't know what. I'm running the latest fast-ring. I probably shouldn't. But basically, if you do that on your machine, you will see the control. That's the same control, okay? For the first time ever, Microsoft is using the same controls as you to build their own experience. And I think we can take a moment to meditate on that. It's really cool. That means that they are confronted to the same problems that you have, right? Maybe the control is not performing as well as it should. Well, they are going to fix it because, you know, if they don't, it's going to break Windows, okay? Maybe it doesn't show up when you click on it. Well, you know, they are going to fix that because basically it's a broken experience. All right, so that's pretty cool. XAML is a first-class citizen in Windows, again, I would say. And they are using it all over the place, right? So this is really cool for what we are doing. Now let me show you a few other apps. I want to start with the calendar control. See, when I go full screen, this is the experience, okay? Did you see the animations? They are pretty cool, okay? They are kind of, you know, it's a little bit free, but you know, it's kind of helping the user to be delighted. So again, create delight. Now here we have this calendar, this control called the split view. And you see the calendar control I was saying before is here. I can collapse it to have a little bit more space. And notice those buttons here, you see, I still have access to them, right? So even when it's collapsed, it's actually still useful. And this is called the compact mode. And this is here the so-called inline mode. Why is it inline? Because it's pushing the content to the side, you see? So this is called the inline mode. Now, if I go small, I still have the hamburger menu here. But if I open, you see now it's the overlay mode. It's not squishing the content to the side, all right? This is built in the split view control. We'll see a demo in a moment, and I'll show you how this is built, okay? So that's pretty cool. Now, the command bar as well. You see, here I have the command bar with some buttons, and here I have just two buttons, but I can open and have more. If I go full screen, it means I will have quite a lot more space, okay? And so now I can expand, and I don't have this view flyout anymore. So those are the small things. Now, let's do something very daring. I'm going to connect to my actual phone here, all right? This is a small phone 520, which is running Windows 10. It's running great. I can scroll down, and if I go to the calendar, here we go. Okay, this is the same calendar, same application, except, well, it's black because the theme is black, right? So the application is going to theme itself, and that's super easy to do. I still have the same experience. So if I go here and open the flyout, right? It is now called overlay, so the flyout is on top of the rest. You see the calendar control I was mentioning before here? I can actually select another oh, we have a Friday the 13th this week. Great. It's actually going to adapt itself to the screen. Instead of having the big control like I had on the PC, I'm going to have a small control on top. Okay, and this is a calendar control here. So adaptive UI, responsive UI. All right. Another example I want to show you quickly, the news application. This one is interesting because they chose a slightly different approach. Okay, so we still have some nice responsive design. Okay, here I have everything side by side, I have multiple columns. Here I have everything vertical. And if you go on the phone, again, it's going to be more vertical. Now here it's slightly different. You see they decided to always go overlay. And they decided to leave the title free. Why not? Again, those are recommendations. They are not strict guidelines that you absolutely have to follow. If you go here, again, here they could have put the control in inline and pushing the content to the side. Why not? But they decided against it. They decided, no, in that case, they really want as much content as possible on the screen. So if you're not using the hamburger menu, it should be always closed, well, compact. Buttons are still accessible. It's fine. But the content is really taking the whole space. Okay? All right. So I told you that Windows has a lot of stuff to help you with these kind of decisions. And one thing which is really useful is the thing called effective pixels. So before in WPF, for those of you who remember, we had something that we called device-independent pixels, right? It's a little bit the same. Basically, an effective pixel means when you design, you shouldn't think of things like screen size, DPI, resolution, and viewing distances, right? Because Windows is going to take care of a lot of that for you. Like, for example, if you go with a square which is 100 times 100 in your standard design, it's going to automatically scale if you go on a Surface Hub or an Xbox. Okay? So that's a big help. Now, of course, you want to test your designs on all those, you know, platforms, but this is really going to help you quite a lot. They also have optimization, like, for example, font size is also going to scale automatically. So just go for a given font size. Don't worry too much about screen size, viewing distance, etc. And that's going to scale to the right size. One thing important when you design, think about the grid. Windows is using a 4x4 grid. And in fact, they have done that for quite a long time, which means that if you go, well, it's a little bit small, but it's a 39 times 39 pixel. If you have something which is taking that, it's not divisible by four, okay? And so that's going to appear a little bit blurry because you're not going to be straight on the pixel. And since they are auto-scaling, they have to take, you know, certain constraints. So that's the constraint you have here. On the other hand, if you go with a 4x4 grid, it's going to be crisp on every device. So that's something you want to think about. That one is funny because it comes from the design guidelines. And in an earlier version, the one which is not divisible by 4, it was actually saying 32 times 32. Take a moment to think about it. You can divide 32 by 4. So I was totally confused. Now they fixed it. Now it's 39. Much better. Now the seaming or the styling, if you want, this is also built-in. Okay? So if you choose a seam, all the controls, the built-in controls, are going to automatically reskin themselves to appear properly. I want to talk a little bit about principles of responsive design. And we talk about the 6R. So one of those principles, you can reposition your elements on the screen. Like, for example, on the phone, I have a vertical experience. I want to have things under each other. If I go on a large screen, rather horizontal experience, I want to put things side by side. Okay? Easy to do with a new control called Relative Panel. I'll show you that in a moment. And Visual State Manager, which is really a beefed up version of the Visual State Manager we had in Windows 8. Resize, well, in that case, they took, by the way, those illustrations come from the design guidelines. So if you go and check it out there, there is quite a lot of material about that. Resize, in that case, they took a text as an example. I really don't like that because you don't want to just resize a panel of text and have a big block of text. Just think of your newspaper. Newspaper have solved that problem centuries ago, right? They don't do that. They have a big sheet of paper. They do small blocks of text, okay? But you want to do a resize for a picture, for example. So if you combine resizing the picture and changing the stretch, you know, you have those uniform and uniform to fill, for example, so your picture doesn't appear distorted, you can actually get some great results. It's exactly what Skype is doing. When you run Skype on the phone, they take the video and they are basically using uniform to fill. So they are filling the whole screen with the video. The picture still looks good. Now, the sides are going to be cropped. I mean, at some point you have to give something up, right? But at least the center, which is where usually your partner is standing, is going to be good. Now for text, you rather want to go with this strategy, which is reflow. All right, so instead of having a big block of text in the center, which nobody can read, and it's really hard without line breaks and all that, you just reflow it, and then you have multiple blocks of text. And reflow is also true for vertical. If you have a big vertical screen, you probably want to do small blocks of text, again, like the newspaper I was mentioning before. Reveal is also important if you have some elements that just don't make sense. For example, on a phone or on a laptop, let's think about geolocation, for example. Often you don't have geolocation on a desktop PC, but you do have it on the phone, right? Then you can show and hide elements. I'm not a super big fan of that because hiding an element can be a little bit dangerous. So try to avoid hiding elements when you go from portrait to landscape, for example, because that's going to confuse your users. They are going to be, I knew there was a button, but I cannot find it just because they are holding the same device in an opposite direction. So here you would rather maybe disable the element or maybe give a hint, right? But reveal can be an interesting strategy in certain cases. And finally, you can replace, well, not quite finally, there is one more. You can also replace elements with another one. And this is, again, quite easy to do with the Visual State Manager. When you go from a very horizontal experience to a very vertical experience, very often it's just easier to just ditch the grid view and use a list view instead. And so you can really, by changing the visibility of an element, you can do that. Now, if you just change the visibility, think about the performance, right? It might have an impact because the XAML parser is still going to parse everything, so you might want to take care of that. Maybe you want to do that in code instead, but basically there are different strategies to do that. And finally, you can also re-architect your application. This is a typical master details scenario. Well, maybe if you go on the phone, you want to have the master on one page and the details on another page with a navigation in between. Now, these kind of scenarios are easy to solve with MVVM, with the Model View View Model Pattern. It's not the topic of that talk, but I have to kind of put it in the discussion here. Because you can have one view model with your data, and instead of having one page in the PC scenario, you have just two pages with a navigation in between. And like this, you keep your UI seen. All right, before we move to demos, I want to show you this new control called Split View. So I already mentioned that a little bit, but basically we have four modes, and each of these modes can have an open pane and a closed pane. So it's a little bit difficult to handle everything of that. But in a typical scenario, we can have on a big wide PC the mode called inline. Well, basically you see the picture is smaller because I have pushed the picture to the side. And of course, I can also have the compact mode, which means the pane is still there. I can still access the buttons, all right, it's through their icons typically, but it is very small and taking much less space. And then you have the compact overlay scenario, which is really very similar to the compact inline mode. In fact, you don't see any difference here. But if you expand it, you're going to have, you see, instead of pushing the picture to the side, I'm actually on top of it. And that's a better scenario when you have a small window, a small screen, because if you squish it to the side, it's going to look absolutely ugly. And also, it's kind of disturbing for the user. You see everything moving, right? If you have a big screen, like before the calendar example, it's just fine. You can do that. Now, in code, importantly, you can also do some adaptive code depending on the device families. And there is a very useful API for that. It's called the API Information class. It's a static class, and then it has things like isTypePresent. So for example, you can detect in advance in your code without having to resort to compiler directives if a type is present or maybe even if a method is present within that type. Okay? And there are a list of methods. Go and check it out, API information class. In many cases, you don't need it because the controls are actually clever enough to do it that to do that themselves, right? But sometimes, well, if you do some advanced scenarios, maybe you want to check out, is what I am doing safe, basically, okay? Okay, so let's see a few scenarios of building a custom experience. Nice, it's actually auto-switching back. I don't know if you guys are doing that, which great. No, so basically I think they just pushed an update to PowerPoint because usually it doesn't switch automatically, so cool. All right, so here I have a few things. First thing I want to show you, let's just start a new instance of Visual Studio. And I'll just show you that you can build, you know, create a new app. And we're going to do the simplest ever adaptive application. So I'm taking here Universal. I'll take just a blank application. Here we go. And then I'm going to open the main page.xaml. I'm a small guy, right? You see, this is app 20. I don't know if you noticed when Mike did his thing, he had app 271. Well, the thing is I clean my folder from time to time. You should try that, Mike. Anyway, mainpage.xaml, and this is going to open up. Here I have, by default, I have the XAML view open, but you could use the designer if you prefer. And one thing we can do, actually, you know what? Let's do that. Let's go to the designer. I'm not going to go to Blend, even though I love Blend, but I'm just going to stay in Visual Studio here. By the way, it's exactly the same designer under the cover. Blend is actually running into your Visual Studio now, which is really cool. So now I have a view. Remember, you can switch the view here if you want, okay? And so let's take the toolbox. I'm going to just put a button on top of that. Here we go, putting a button. And I'm just going to open the properties here. And I'm simply going to say this is a fairly long text. All right. Now, obviously, if I run this, nothing much is going to happen. Let's put it totally here. And maybe what we can do also, let's put here another button and a third one. And of course, if I run this on different machines, it's going to look weird. Like, for example, if I turn, even on the same machine, but I turn in landscape, I could use the screen better. So what I want to show you is that you already have some techniques at your disposal to do these kind of things. One thing is simply using stretch, okay? So I'm going to take this button here, and it's probably going to look much better if I go on the layout. And I'm just going to, let me zoom a little bit here so you see better. Just going to set the stretch, and then I'm going to set margins, and remember 10 doesn't divide very well by 4, right? It's like primary school math, right? You don't know to do the commas yet, so you want to have 12 pixels probably. Let's put 12 on each side and 12 on top, okay? All right. Now, if I switch to landscape, well, it's already looking better, okay? Obviously, if you have a large 24-inch screen or even the big, Surface Hub with 85-inch screen, you don't want that. So here, you need to adapt better. But for these kind of small scenarios, it's already not bad. Then another thing we can do, let's put here a row in my grid. Okay. Here we go. And I'm going to put some colons here. And I'm simply going to set here the star to 1 star. So basically what I say is each colon needs to take half of the remaining space, all right? I can place that guy here, and now this button here, I will say, let's put the same 12 here, and I'm going to again set the stretch like that. And same thing for this button. Here I would probably do a style at some point for those buttons, but you know, keeping it simple. And so I guess what I am showing you here is that you already have the tools and the knowledge to build adaptive design, right? So think about the grid. Designers love grid because they are going to reflow automatically, all right? And think about the stretch, and then you already have the simplest adaptive application ever. Okay? Now let's move that a little bit further. And the next example I want to show you is a split view. So here I have a sample. I actually have the application here. All right, this is the same application I had before. And a few things which are interesting. Here I am in a mode where the split view is going on overlay. Okay, it's not pushing the picture to the side. Now if I go full screen, now it is inline. You see it pushed to the side. And even nicer, it's going to actually open and close automatically when I resize. So this is a Visual State Manager doing that. Now the buttons are still responsive. You see they are going a little bit bigger, the icon. And if I click, something happens. So even though the split view is in compact mode, buttons are still absolutely usable. Okay. So let's see how this is done. It's actually all XAML, except opening and closing the pane. And here what we are going to do is use the split view control in XAML as the root of your page. You're going to have a split view.pane, which is a pane which opens and closes. By the way, you can design that in Blend or in the Visual Studio Designer. You can do it directly there. Then I have my buttons. And here my buttons, I took care of defining a style. And by the way, you'll get all that. This code, and if you jump to the template, you see this magical number 48, right? It's the value, it's the width of the compact pane when it is in compact mode. So if I do my buttons with a grid, a height of 48, and then I do my buttons also with a grid with a width of 48, and I put a small icon inside there, that's the icon you will see when you actually have the thing in compact mode. Okay, and by using Visual State Manager, you can easily add some small animations like growing a little bit the icon and the text separately. So just by using here those templates, we have these kind of things going on. Few other things interesting. So here I have the content of the split view. This is the green, in that case, a green grid with an image. Okay, and I'm going to use the Visual State Manager to take care of opening, closing the pane at the right moment. Now, a few things which are new in the Visual State Manager, you now have a so-called setters collection. For those of you who used the Visual State Manager before, you may remember that the code it was spitting was absolutely unbearable because it was all storyboard, and the storyboard is like 40 lines of XAML, right? Even the smallest one. Now you can simplify your XAML. If you don't want an animation, but you just want to specify a state, you can actually use a setter, which is very much like in a style. So here what I'm going to say, I'm going to say in that particular state, I want the display mode to be inline. Okay? So which means that I'm going to push the screen. Now what is this state and how do you come to it? I called it the white state. And I'm using the state triggers. Mike showed you a small example before with a custom trigger. And if you remember, he told you there is one built-in. Well, that's the one, the adaptive trigger. Adaptive trigger is going to trigger the state based on the size of the window. Okay? It's like the simplest thing, but it's really super useful. And so what I say here, I say if my window is bigger than 800 pixels, I want you to go in that state, and in that state, I want the display mode of the split view to be inline, which means I'm going to push the content to the side. That's what the calendar was doing before. And I want the pane to be open. All right? Now, on the other hand, I have a narrow state. The narrow state triggers at zero. So basically, it's everything which is smaller than 800. And in the narrow state, I want the display mode to be compact overlay, meaning that it's going to open on top of the content without pushing it. And I would like the pane to be closed because I have a narrow window. I want to show as much content as possible. Okay? Now, another tool that you can use to do responsive design is a thing called the relative panel. It's a new panel. And to show you, I have here some options. So I can switch here to a relative panel. You see now it's side by side, but if I go narrow, now it's on top of each other, okay? To do that, again, I have my styles, I have my relative panel down there, all right, with the content. If you don't do anything else, the relative panel acts very much like a grid, meaning that all your controls are going to appear on top of each other in the Z space. All right? First is below, and I mean in the back, and then the last one is on top. So now what we want to do is configure that, and I'm doing that in the states here. I'm going to say when I am in the white state, I want the first name text, which is a text box, to be to the right of this element called first name label. So I'm basically saying you should be, the text box has to be on the right of the label. Funny syntax, huh? If on the other hand, I am in narrow space, I want the first name text to be below the first name label. And this is exactly what the relative panel is doing here. Here I have more space, but here I have less horizontal space and I want to scroll vertically. Okay? So those two controls, the split view and the relative panel, are really helping you for those scenarios. They are pretty basic, but you're going to use them all over the place, probably. All right? Be careful a little bit with the relative panel. Okay? It can be a little bit tricky sometimes. So you don't want to, like now we use grid pretty much all over the place because designers love grid. I don't see that stopping anytime now, but you can use relative panels maybe inside your grids to position your elements. All right? Okay, now another example I want to show you is this one. So now I have a button. When I click on the button with my mouse, I'm going to have a small UI. If I go with my finger, it's going to be big. And if I go with my pen, it's also going to be big. All right? So I told you that the menu flyout has some this behavior built in. And that's true when you have an actual menu with menu items. Now, if you want to build some custom UI like here, for example, selecting a color, you can do that yourself. And so what I did here, I have a trigger. This is actually deriving from state trigger based. Okay, this is what you want to use to create your custom triggers. And this one is called input type trigger. What I'm going to do is just save the last pointer type which was used by the user when he actuated the button. All right. What we are going to do is we have access to the target element, which is the element that the trigger is attached to. Okay? The element that the trigger is targeting, to be exact. When it is set, I'm going to add a handler for pointer pressed event. And every time that the pointer pressed event is happening, which can happen either on touch, on pen, or on mouse, I'm going to check what is a pointer device type. Now, this pointer device type is an enumeration. Oops, it's not what I want. Oh, yeah, sorry, that's the property, of course. I need to show you the type. So here you have touch, pen, and mouse. All right? And I'm going to call this method setActive, which is a method from the state trigger base. All right? I'm going to set this trigger active if the pointer type, which is specified as a property, is equal to the actual pointer type that the user just used. And now imagine the scenario where you have multiple triggers defined in your Visual State Manager. At some point, one of them is going to be active. All right? So in that case, the active one is the one which corresponds to the click or the touch or the pen event. All right? Now, how do we use that in XAML? Well, here I have my flyout. I have some rectangles with some names. You see that I use a relative panel to position them. I could have used a grid exactly the same way. And then I use the Visual State Manager. And I'm going to say, here you see I'm using the input type trigger, which is my custom trigger, hence the custom namespace. And I'm going to target the menu button. And then I say when the menu button is clicked with a mouse pointer type, I want to go into this state. And this state is using a style for each rectangle called mouse style. Mouse style is a small rectangle. If on the other hand I am using touch or pen, then I want to go in that style and I'm going to use a touch pen style. And here is the styles. The mouse style is smaller one. I'm using here 8 pixels margin and 24 pixel size. okay? And here for the finger style, I'm using 20 pixels margin and 44 pixels size. And so like this, it's going to switch automatically. Now there is a collection of these type of triggers available online. There are quite a few of them. Mike's example was one of them. I have a friend called Morten Nielsen. He's a great guy, also an MVP. He has a nice collection of them. You have the link in the resources in the last slide. So check it out. There is really a ton of stuff that you can do with those triggers. Okay, the last sample I want to show you is a device family. That is pretty cool. So device family, here I have a small app. I'm going to run it on my... Oh, here it's running on my phone, so I will probably want to show you the screen. Here we go. Just giving it a moment to deploy. And basically, this is the simplest application possible. It just has a grid with a background. And here the background is red. Okay, we get red background. And if I go on the PC with the same application, and I deploy to the local machine, let's run that. I also have a window, and not surprisingly, it's going to be red. Okay, very exciting. Now, I showed you before the Visual State Manager, so you can already rearrange stuff on the screen quite easily. But sometimes it's a little bit too much. Sometimes you want to just have a different page on the phone, right? Maybe your XAML is growing too big, and then you have too many states, and then you start to lose the overview, all right? So what you can do, I prepared here a folder. You see it's called device-family-mobile, okay? I'm going to include that in the project. And so you have all kinds of device families. There is one for Xbox, there is one for Surface Hub, there is one, believe it or not, for HoloLens. So you can say here, this is a view you need to use if you are using on the device family, in that case, mobile. Then inside there, you're going to put some XAML. So here I have my main page.xaml with the code behind, and here, I am adding a XAML file by going to add new item. And this time you don't want to take a blank page because blank page is going to have some code behind. You don't want code behind. This is just the UI which is changing. Instead, I'm taking a XAML view. All right? And you take care of giving it the same name. Earlier, you saw that we had a different strategy. We had main page.xaml and then dash. And then device dot device family dash mobile. You can also do that. Personally, I prefer the folder approach because I'm a neat guy. I like to have my stuff in folders. Okay? So here I have a different page, and this page is going to use blue when it is running on mobile. So now if I run this on the local machine, it's going to use red because I'm on a PC. And basically, this one here is a fallback, right? You also have a device family for laptops, but basically here I'm falling back to the default. And then if I go with ARM on the phone, let's deploy that. It's going to just take a second to deploy. So in the moment, my application is still red, but now it's going to switch to blue. And basically, I'm using a totally different XAML page, okay? So those strategies you have, split view, to help you design your screen nicely. Visual State Manager, if you want to rearrange things or change the order of things or hide things, remember the 6 R's that we saw. And if really it's too much, well, you can switch the whole XAML view and use a device family instead. All right. So I have a few resources here. Most importantly of all, design guidelines. Even if you're a developer, you probably want to skim through the design guidelines at least once because there is really a lot of good stuff there, okay? You'll get all the slides. By the way, the conference already has it. And I'll put that on my blog as well. I'll show you the link at the end. So design guidelines, super important. A lot of good material. I showed you here the tip of the iceberg, of the proverbial iceberg, but really there is a lot on, well, it's not underwater. I hope not. There is a lot below, right? adaptive triggers. This is a good article showing how to use adaptive triggers. And so the adaptive one is the one which is based on the size of the screen, but it's a good introduction on how to use that. And finally, the custom triggers library. My good friend Morten did good work here. And this is all open source on GitHub. So worth taking a look. Okay, at this point, I'm done with my presentation. I would like to thank you very much for your attention. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to take them. Thank you very much.